You're listening to The Clock and Talk, an Arsenal podcast. I'm your host for today, Schwinn, and I'm joined by Tony. How are you doing, Tony?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks.
Now that we finally managed to get over those technical difficulties, I'm glad we were able to join in and record. We apologize to our listeners for the delay and for those who were expecting Gimli to be hosting today's show. Gim's internet has had some trouble, so we urge you to divert all complaints to the council in Gimli Town. Anyway, we hope that he'll join us soon, and we'll keep you updated as to when that's happening next. Let's move on to CSKA and get discussing with the cracking game we had at the Emirates on Thursday. So we'll start with the lineup, and Tony, let's get your thoughts on that real quick.
I think when we done our podcast after the Stoke game and we looked ahead to CSKA, I think I pretty much said that would be the team and the only choice was between Lacazette and Welbeck, and I thought he would go Lacazette. I potentially would have gone Welbeck, I remember saying at the time, but I, to be honest, I think the team pretty much picked itself.
Yeah, I was expecting Jack to drop off and maybe us including Welbeck on the wing and having Lacazette up top, but it seemed like maybe there was something that was bothering Welbeck. He came off on Sunday with a back problem, and even before the game started, I thought we were a little too single-dimensional in attack, but of course I was proven wrong. But the game had a very fiery start. I mean, Mkhitaryan had a chance very early on, I think the fourth or the fifth minute, and I mean, I think that was almost a trailer for what was going to happen next, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, they were awful at the back, and I don't know if it's because they are awful at the back or because they, and their manager since admitted it was a mistake, but they came to go toe-to-toe. They came to have a fight with us, where, to be honest, I didn't expect that. I thought they would try and keep it tight, even if they lost 1-0 or 2-1, that would be a good result for them. I was really surprised that they came and tried to play, and I think after the game, their manager said, you can't come somewhere like this and try and go toe-to-toe with them. But it was so open because they were so open. I mean, their three up front, Zagoyev, Musa and Wernbloom, I think his name is, they pretty much stayed up top. It wasn't like it was free when they was attacking and then only one stayed up when they was defending, as we were used to seeing in the Premier League. It was literally at all times, all three of them were occupying our back line.
And even in defense, I remember reading somewhere that the Berezutsky twins, Ignashevich, and their goalkeeper, Akinfe, if you combine their age, they were almost 130 years old. So not too much pace back there. And then then they were leaving some players up top as well. But let's get to the first goal, which happened in the ninth minute, and Aaron Ramsey for his first onto the score sheet. What'd you make of the play there?
Yeah, it was really nice football. Obviously, you nicked it back in the middle. Good ball by Ozil through to Jack, and I thought Jack done quite well, and probably the only thing in the game he did do well, but I thought he done quite well because I think a lot of players would have tried to turn and have a snapshot that wasn't really on, but he was quite composed, held the ball up, give it back to Ozil, and then in something that I'm really going to do, it was a brilliant pick out by Bellerin. I often think a lot of the times when he gets to the byline he doesn't pick anyone out, he just puts it into an area. Mm-hmm. But I think with that ball, and I thought it at the time and haven't seen it again, I think he actually did pick out Ramsey. And I mean, it was an emphatic finish, but it's exactly what you expect. Not because it's Ramsey, but anyone with that chance, you expect them to score from there.
One of Bellerin's better attacking games. I mean, I think Musa gave a lot of trouble back there, and it was Mustafi who was tidying things up back in defense. But I think in terms of offensive play, I think this was Bellerin's one of his better performances. Would you agree?
I definitely wouldn't say he was bad, but I can't remember too many other instances when he was involved. As I said, he got the assist, and he had a few overlaps, but I can't remember another time where I thought, oh, great ball by Bellerin or whatnot. So, again, you may just be remembering stuff I don't, but I didn't come out of the ground thinking, oh, Bellerin played well today or Bellerin was better than he has been in recent weeks.
Fair. Let's move forward, and 6 minutes after scoring the first goal, we concede a shabby free kick. Let's be honest, I think Koscielny should have done a little better there, and up steps Golovin, who we've been linked with numerous times in the past couple of seasons. Was that just an unstoppable free kick?
I just want to go a bit back before, because I thought Mustafi had an awful first half, and the goal started from his bizarre overhead. I don't even know what he was trying. I would actually love to ask him, what were you trying to do? And then, yeah, it was a stupid foul by Koscielny. As soon as he started running, because it was at my end of the pitch, everyone started going no, because you knew he couldn't get there without fouling the guy. Mm-hmm. So it's annoying that the goal came from a mistake from both centre-backs. The free kick for me was unstoppable. I thought it was unbelievable. There was a couple of people around me moaning, but I think the pace it was hit at, it didn't really go up and down too high, which means it's got a shorter arc, which means it gets to the goal quicker. I just thought it was a very good hit. To be honest, I thought Golovin had a very good game, all in all.
You know what it reminded me of? That Dimitri Payet free kick against Crystal Palace, where you know it had that audacious curve on it. Of course, that was from a different angle, but it just, you know, sometimes you just know that the ball is going to find the back of the net and the goalkeeper cannot do anything about it. And it was just one of those moments for me. I mean, I couldn't even get pissed at our wall or at the goalkeeper because it was just struck so purely. And, I mean, he couldn't have placed it any better with his hands, I feel.
But yeah, no, I mean, Payet's one had a big arc. It went up and down. It's an unbelievable free kick. But I think the reason the keeper struggled with that is it... 2 yards away from the goal, it was 2 yards over the bar and it just dipped viciously, whereas this one it was pretty flat, which again makes it harder in terms of speed because it gets to the goal quicker because it doesn't have to have that arc. But yeah, I thought it was unbelievable free kick. As you said, he couldn't have, if you'd have given the ball in his hands and said where do you want it to go, I think he would have put it there.
Mm-hmm. But the game did open up from then. I mean, you would expect the way we've played so far this season that, you know, we take some time to get back into our groove and sort of pick ourselves up. But it seemed like yesterday, Thursday, well, was our day and we were not going to take no for an answer. Up steps Mesut Ozil and a quick, you know, exchange with Aaron Ramsey close to the box. And then he finds himself, I would say, almost stumbling down. I think... their left wing back, if you want to call him that, I'm forgetting his name, Shennikov maybe, did us a favor by lunging in. I thought Mesut Ozil was already stumbling, maybe, you know, not diving, but maybe losing his footing. Did you get that same feeling as well?
Yeah, I mean, I somewhat agree. I think he still would have gotten the ball, but he was stumbling, and I think that's why the ref took so long to give it, because it was such an obvious penalty, and he took ages, and I think it was because Ozil was already falling, but... I'm not saying he would have scored, but I still think he'd have been able to get a shot or a pass away had the tackle not come in. But yeah, he definitely was stumbling. He definitely was going like on his way down.
Well, up steps Lacazette for the penalty, and he obliges. Cool, calm penalty, right?
Yeah, great penalty. But Akin Fayev dived about 10 seconds before Lacazette kicked the ball. It was ridiculous.
Did you really? I completely missed that. I think I was just too excited. I just kept hoping that he's not going to go right. For some reason, I had a feeling that was going to be where Akinfeev jumps. And I'm just glad that we slotted that goal in, because if he did, I don't know how things would have turned up, despite us, you know, dominating that first 20 minutes or 15 minutes, whatever that was.
Yeah, I said, if you look at it back, by the time Lacazette actually kicks the ball, Akinfeev's already gone. His feet are off the floor. That penalty could have been awful as long as it went that side of the goal. And it shows as well that maybe Aubameyang giving him the penalty the other day paid in the short term as well as in the long term.
So that's a very good point. That's absolutely spot on, because I don't know who else would have stepped up. I mean, of course, it would have been Lacazette even if he didn't get that penalty on Sunday. But having earned that confidence right off the bat, I think that definitely helped. Let's move further forward and talk about the magical part of the game. I mean, this attack started somewhere deep in our half from a long ball that was contested, I think, by Mustafi. And then about 10 passes forward, Mesut Ozil is on the left wing and he spots Aaron Ramsey backtracking his run and then pointing towards where he was going. Walk me through that Rambo magic.
What slightly annoyed me about it is the finish is so good that people have forgot that it came off the back of a really good move. It's like any time anyone speaks about it, they go, oh, ball in from Ozil and an audacious finish or whatnot. But as you said, it started deep in our own half and there was a few passes out on the left wing that were unbelievable in themselves. And yeah, I mean, the finish is crazy. It's one of goals, and I think off the top of my head I've seen it. It's the third time I've seen it at the Emirates, where the ball goes in and there's sort of silence for, it's probably less than half a second, but what? Because people think like, fuck, have I just seen that?
More disbelief than anything else.
Yeah, and it takes a while for people to celebrate. As I said, it might only be half a second, but when you're in that moment, it feels like, it's like everyone takes a breath and then celebrates. And the only other times I can remember that, a Jack's goal against Norwich, and Giroud's goal against Palace last year, the scorpion kick, it was an unbelievable finish from the back of an unbelievable move, but it was one of them that it was just like, wow, have I actually just seen that?
Something I watched after the game was Aaron Ramsey speaking to one of the journos, and he said he actually saw Akinfev move from the line. Now, when I watched that goal in real time, I did not see any indication of Ramsey having that clear vision of sight. And since then, I've seen the goal multiple times from different angles. I don't know how Aaron Ramsey saw the goalkeeper move up the line. Plus, I don't even think that Akinfev was, he was barely off the line. I mean, I'm still bewildered as to how he had the presence of mind to, to place it like that. And, I mean, I think it was a very good summation. I mean, the game itself was a very good summation of what Aaron Ramsey is capable of. And I think this goal, in essence, really caps off what we've been saying all along, that his contract needs to be tied down, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's no two ways about it that we need to, if possible, get him to renew. In terms of whether he saw the keeper coming out, I think a lot of football is played on instinct, and these guys' instincts are better than the average man. Obviously, they're doing this every day. And I think he knows that if he brings the ball down there, which everyone expected him to do because he had that amount of time, that the keeper's going to come rushing out to be at his feet. So I remember, going slightly off topic, I remember watching a documentary on Cristiano Ronaldo before, and they said his brain in football is like, if you compared it to a qualification, it would be like a PhD. It's that advanced that he sees things before they happen because he knows football so well and knows that they're going to happen. And I think in a way, that's kind of what happened to Ramsey there. He's thought, if I bring this down, because of the position I'm in, the keeper's going to come flying out, so I'll just lift it up. And I think sometimes, because that comes so naturally to them, it kind of tricks them into believing themselves that he saw his keeper come off the line.
Mm.
When, as I said, there's been times where, as I said, this Ronaldo documentary went into it quite well. And it was, he said, oh, I saw such and such happen. And they had the camera on him and it was like, you never once looked that way. But the picture he built in his mind was so good that he's convinced himself that he's seen it, if that makes sense.
Right. Yeah, that's fantastic. I mean, it just shows that how aware you have to be at the top level to be able to form that picture. I mean, that's why I keep telling people that just watch a Fabregas video, because he's always got his head on a swivel, and that helps him make that image.
And I think paints the picture.
Yeah, and I think Aaron Ramsey did really well to find the back of the net. Where do you rank this, just out of curiosity, in Aaron Ramsey goals? Because of course that Galatasaray screamer comes to mind, and a couple of ones against Norwich.
Yeah, it's a difficult one. I saw, because I think Arsenal themselves tweeted out this question the other day. And if someone just said to me flatly, what is the best Aaron Ramsey goal, I'd say Galatasaray.
Mm.
If I just didn't think, if someone said, like, bang, name it, I'd go Galatasaray. But, I mean, it's difficult. For feeling, you've got to go with the cup final winners. But in terms of quality of goal, I really like the one against Norwich, I think it's in the same game as Jack's goal, where he turned the defender a couple of times.
Mm-hmm.
That's more my type of goal than a long-range hit. I mean, it's a tough one. But, I mean, the Galatasaray one, I don't think I've ever seen anything like it. His technique was wrong. He was on his wrong foot, 40 yards out. And it was at a time when we didn't expect anything of Ramsey. He wasn't the Ramsey he is now. So I think that was just a complete more of a shock. And as I said, that's the one that comes to mind straight away when people go, Aaron Ramsey goals.
Yeah, still needs explaining, doesn't it?
It just makes no sense. Like, it had no right to go there.
Yeah, I think Yaya Sonogo's reaction said it all, really. And I think one camera caught him, so I'm glad we'll have that forever.
Well, I remember there was an interview with, it was like one of the little Arsenal mess about things behind the scenes, and it was Chamberlain and Iwobi, and Chamberlain said to Iwobi, what's the best goal you've ever seen? And he said Ramsey, and Chamberlain went like, no chance. And he went, no, I saw it live, like I was there.
In the
flesh,
like,
it was, yeah.
Fantastic. Before we talk about the last goal that we scored, which was again a Lacazette goal from a Mesut Ozil assist, I do want to talk about the rest of the time between these goals. And it felt like to me that we have not played football like this for a really long time. Maybe the last time was perhaps either one of the Milan games where we came close enough, or maybe the Everton game. But again, the squad was a little different back then because Aubameyang was playing and Lacazette wasn't. What did you make of the first half in general? Because I do really feel that we, you know, having won the game on Sunday, that helped us pick up momentum, and it really thrusted us forward. Was this the best half of football we've played so far?
I mean, you just bring up the Milan games and the Everton games, and I don't think either of them compare to how we played on Thursday. I mean, you can argue that, as I said, Moscow were a bit open, but I always say, look, when Ozil plays well, Arsenal play well, and he was an absolute joke on Thursday. Everything he done was on a superior level to everyone else, and I know we're going to get into it later, but it's when people are asking a question about man in a match, I just think, if you don't think it's him, you watched the game wrong. And when he's ticking like that, especially against an open defence, that does help. But when he's ticking like that against a defence that is so open, you can't help but look exceptional.
Fair enough. Yeah, I think he was absolutely phenomenal. I mean, you don't need to say much more than that about Mesut Ozil's performance. Let's move on to the last goal that we scored. Again, 35th minute, I think. Brilliant ball by Xhaka to release Ozil onto the wing, and then he finds Lacazette between a group of players. Was that a lucky finish?
Yes and no. It was lucky in terms of a way a lot of finishes are lucky. He meant to pull it exactly where it went, so you can in a way argue it's not lucky. But he did slightly shin it. I mean, it wasn't a complete shin. It was somewhere between his foot and his shin. It was like, I don't know, I would say level with his ankle, but at the front. I don't know if you want to call that shin or whatnot. But it was a great pick out from Ozil. Again, Ozil's very good at that. When he gets to the byline, he always picks someone out. He very rarely just fizzes it in. And you mentioned a great ball from Xhaka, and another brilliant game from him. He was nowhere near man of the match, as I've just said, so he probably won't get as much credit as he has for the other games he's been very good in recently. But again, it was a great performance from Granit. In terms of luck, I think you can put that down to like was Golovin's free kick lucky, because it went exactly where he meant it to go, but he could try that 100 times and 90 times it wouldn't go there. So it's one of them. If you see that as lucky, then yeah, it's lucky. If you don't, you don't. It's
No, that's a fair analysis. Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, as you said, it hit his shin, but at the end of the day, he did ripple the net, and he found the side netting. So 4-1 at the end of the first half, and we still had a couple of chances. Another one that comes to mind is when Granit Xhaka found Mesut Ozil, and he tried to, use the outside of his foot, but the ball sailed above the crossbar. That would have been a picture-perfect goal, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I think Ozil's body shape was terrible, and he was like half-twisting. It would have been a great goal, but Ozil's body shape, it would have made it near impossible to score from there.
Right. Let's talk about CSKA a little bit, because we still do have to face them next week. And from, I think it was pretty clear that they did pose a threat. They used Musa pretty well, and they were not, afraid of committing bodies forward on a break. But they did lack a lot of end product. I mean, whether it was the final pass or whether it was, the final shot they took. Zagoev had a couple of cracks. There was one instance when Berzutsky joined in the attack and he sailed one into Rosette. So what do you expect from them on Thursday in terms of the way they set up and the way they attack? And do you think that this tie is done and dusted, despite us missing many chances in the second half? I mean, we'll talk about that a little bit, but let's talk about CSKA, just quickly.
I think they have to go for it. So I can see them being as open as they were on Thursday. Probably even more open, because they're going to have to play 10 yards higher up, you'd imagine. It depends. I think, we can afford to rest some players, but I don't think we can afford to take the kind of liberties that we did with Ostersunds at home. And obviously we went on to lose that. I think we can rest some players. Maybe if it depends how much you value the Newcastle game on next Sunday. Maybe I think everyone has to travel. Whether they play is a different story. So even the likes of Ozil, he has to go. Whether you play him is I don't know if they. It depends how they're feeling about Newcastle next week. But yeah, I think they're going to be as open, if not even more so, because they need three goals. The only thing I see that they might change is, I mean, I don't know if you know, but the guy they played up front, Wernbloom, is a defensive midfielder. But he's, I mean, in recent weeks, apparently, he's quite good in the air, and he's been good as a target man in his layoffs and such, so they've been playing him up front. But I don't know if they'll go for someone more. I don't know if they'll play start Vitinho and maybe move Zagoyev into like a false nine with Musa and Vitinho ahead of him, because they're both quite pacey. I think in terms of what you said about wastefulness, I think Musa, we kind of know that. He's quick, he's sharp, he's capable of hitting the back of the net from 25 yards. But you also know he is going to be quite frustrating and quite wasteful. So I don't think nothing I saw from Musa came as a surprise. And then if I'm honest, I thought Zagoyev played quite well, and I didn't know much else about the rest of them as an attacking unit.
Yeah, I was not aware of that about Wernbloom. I mean, I remember mentioning a couple of times on our previous podcast that I just haven't watched any of Moscow because I haven't had a reason to. Usually, you know, you watch these teams against one of the bigger teams in the Champions League or something, but I don't think there has been one of those fixtures this season out.
They played Man United. They were in Man United's group.
That's right. So, as I said, they haven't played any of the big teams, right? yeah, let's talk about the second half. And before we get on to all the chances that we missed and, you know, what those implications might be, talk to me about Jack Wilshere. I mean, ever since the game, even during the game, I remember speaking with one of our followers, there seemed to be this poison almost, I want to say, for Jack. I mean, I know he didn't have the best of games, but there's a lot of hate for Jack Wilshere going on right now. I mean, he didn't have the best of games, but he didn't make too many mistakes either, right? He had a very Elneny game, I want to say. What did you make of it?
I mean, I'll start this off because I'm going to say the exact opposite to what everyone thinks. I'm going to say, look, I'm a huge Wilshere fan, and everyone knows that. He was awful. His general passing was terrible. What's more frustrating? I thought he was okay in the first half. I thought the second half he was awful. But what's the most frustrating thing is that everyone wanted him to. They weren't booing him. Look, there's no ill feeling towards him in the stands. I can tell you that much. It's why I'm always surprised when I come out of the ground and I look on Twitter and there is a lot of hate. And I've brought it up on here before. But in the stands, there's not. He's still as much love as there's pretty much ever been. But they can admit when he played bad. I thought he was bad. But the frustration comes with his last action. Was an inch perfect through ball over the top to Iwobi. Waited perfectly, could run onto it. But it was like, for most of the second half, he couldn't pass the ball 5 yards. So I don't understand the hate at all. And I spoke about this last week, so I'm not going to go too much into it. But I agree with the people that said he had a bad game. But as I said before, and I've seen a couple of other people tweet it, our fan base is so reactionary that because he's had a bad game, it's awful, we don't want him to sign a new contract. But in January, people were going, oh, if we don't, we're a joke of a club if he doesn't sign a new contract. It's just, people just seem to make up their opinion week by week.
I'm going to put you on the spot here because I know that after the game, you got a chance to see the plug and the mole. So did they have any update on the Wilshere contract situation at all? I mean, we spoke about this last week, but since you met these two chaps, I thought I would just bring this up.
No, and I'm not, I don't know if either of them listened to this, and I'm not trying to dig them out, but they both claimed that he'd signed in December when I said he hadn't, because I'd spoke to his agent's lawyer. We spoke about that, and I don't really want to go into it, but definitely nothing's been signed, and it doesn't look like anything's close. There was no real update from either of them on it. I've not heard any more on it. There has been at least two offers, and there's been offers from elsewhere.
And high-paying offers, as you mentioned previously, correct?
Yeah, we're offering more than what he's been offered at Arsenal.
Well, let's just hope that we can make something of this. You know, with Aaron Ramsey's contract running out and that almost hitting a stalemate, I think it's essential that we at least hold on to, you know, at least one of them, if not both. But moving forward and talking about another midfielder who picked up a knock and was subbed off, Henrik Mkhitaryan, it seemed as if that he has, you know, picked up something serious, and Arsene also doesn't seem very assured as to what his timeline is going to be. How much are we going to miss him?
Well, I'll start off by just because I thought he was quite poor on Thursday. He played one through ball to Bellerin, I think, towards the end of the first half. That was exceptional. Most people didn't even see it, as in see that the pass was on. But I thought he had a poor game. But again, I've seen a lot of people saying otherwise, and I don't know if that's just because, again, he's kind of new. He's got that all the good feeling towards him that we've previously spoke about. But I mean, it's poor is harsh, but I don't think he had a good game. In terms of injury, when I saw, in the ground, it looked like knee-on-knee contact, which hurts a lot, but generally doesn't lead to a bad injury. It will lead to you going off because it gives you a dead leg pretty much. And then when I saw it on TV, I thought exactly the same thing. When Wenger said he's worried that he's out for a while, and they're saying they think it might be medial ligaments. Medial knee ligaments usually are 4 to 6 weeks. It's not confirmed as medial. But if it is, which is what the club seem to be hinting that it is, depending on how bad it is, obviously it can be disastrous or it could be not bad at all. But in general, the average medial knee ligament injury is 4 to 6 weeks. In terms of missing him, I mean, it's a tough one because the league doesn't overly matter. We may come fifth, probably won't. We could come seventh, probably won't. So the league's not overly important. In terms of the Europa League, I don't know what the gap is between next week and the potential semis if we get there, which it looks like we should. Because it's going to be a week till then. If it's then a further 2 weeks for the semis, it's potentially a chance he could be back for the second leg of the semis. So I wouldn't like to say how big of a miss it's going to be until we know the full extent of it.
I'm just looking up here if I can find the schedule for the Europa League. And after April 12th, it would be April 26th.
Yeah, I thought so. Yeah, so there's a two-week gap.
That's right.
So by then it'll be 3 weeks, 3 weeks done, like 3 weeks of his injury done. And as I said, it depends on how bad the medial ligament is, if it is medial, but that could be within recovery time.
Well, I think that's a very good point. I think you're right. He didn't have the brightest of games, but I think what Henrik Mkhitaryan poses is an additional threat for the opposition to think about, and that has definitely relieved certain responsibilities of Mesut Ozil. I fear that if he is missing for some of the games in the Europa League, we'll have to accommodate Welbeck or Iwobi in one of these roles, and that doesn't necessarily do us any favors. So I do think we'll miss him. Before we jump to any conclusions, it'd be better to wait and see what the club has to officially say on this matter. Let's move ahead and talk about Iwobi a bit. He came on late on in the game. There were a couple of substitutions made up apart from Iwobi when Lacazette was taken off and Welbeck came on for him, and Elneny came on as well for a cameo. Iwobi had a couple of chances. Once he was slid in by Mesut Ozil, and I think he was almost in two minds when he slid in the ball for Lacazette. Do you think he was going for goal there?
No, it was definitely a pass. 100% it was a pass.
What does that tell you about him? I mean, you're on goal. You have a decent angle. I'm not going to say that he had a very good angle to find the back of the net, but doesn't that shout that he's lacking confidence at this moment?
I half agree and half disagree. I thought the angle was perfect. I thought that was literally don't take a touch, just open your body and pull it in the corner. It shows everything you need to know about his confidence at the moment. But it's not, his confidence has come from his own form. So, I mean, obviously when Lacazette stopped scoring, people were blaming Wenger for taking him off or not starting him in certain big games. But I didn't agree with that at the time, but with Iwobi, the reason for his lack of confidence is how poorly he's been playing. So there's no way to fix that. Like, the way to fix it is play better. And obviously that's not a choice. If he could play better, he would. He's not deciding to play bad.
Would you throw him into the team for some of the Premier League games to find some of this confidence? I mean, we know that he has a certain skill set. As average as it can be at times, I think he brings some directness to our game, which we lack at moments. And, I mean, Henrik Mkhitaryan is one of those players who brings that. Now, if he is missing, then Iwobi could be someone who could, bring some impetus into the attack. So for him to find his form, would you take a gamble on him in some of the Premier League games, or do you think Burnley are breathing down our neck too closely for that?
I mean, I don't particularly care about Burnley. I couldn't care less if we come sixth or seventh, to be honest. But it's a difficult one because every time... The reason he's got that lack of confidence is because he has been thrown into them games and he's been poor in all of them, pretty much. Brighton, he was actively cheered off the pitch, which, again, you could say is another situation where he came into the game because we had a Europa League game after and people were looking more at that. And he was terrible. So I see what you're saying about putting him in to build his confidence, but that would require him to play well. The reason he's got this lack of confidence is exactly that reason. He's been put in for these games and not played well.
Mm-hmm. I think that's fair. Let's see what happens on Sunday. We host Southampton. Let's do a quick preview of that before we go into questions. What are you expecting on Sunday? Let's start with a suitable lineup that you think would be enough to get over the Saints.
So, checking goal. Do you know, I think Maitland-Niles will play one of the two games at right back, and I think Wenger said he may be a bit short for Saturday. Or if he does, it's difficult because I think I'm kind of looking at the games as a three: Southampton, Moscow, and Newcastle. Mm-hmm. And I can't see Hector playing all three. What one he misses out on is the question. I'm really going to be sitting on the fence with this lineup. I think Mustafi will play. I think one of Holding and Chambers will play, probably Chambers. Kolasinac, I think, will play at left back. Elneny will get a start, I'd imagine, alongside Jack to try and get him into a bit of form. I mean, he doesn't seem to like dropping Ozil, or resting Ozil, should I say. So you go Ozil, Welbeck. I personally would rest Ramsey and probably go with Iwobi behind. Or does he try and get Lacazette and Aubameyang together? To me, it's a really hard team for me to pick this Southampton on Sunday. I mean, I don't know how you would go, but I think there's so many... Because, as I said, I'm looking at the fixtures as a group of three. I find it difficult. I don't know what you would go with.
Yeah, I think the Saints provide less of a threat than Newcastle. And even though the Europa League game is sandwiched, you know, between them, I think we will go for Aubameyang and Lacazette. I mean, it's nothing to do with the opposition. I think we're just trying to find some sort of synergy in the team when it comes to playing both of them. And having witnessed what, you know, they did in that small window on Sunday, I think Wenger would like to give them a chance. I don't know about Ramsey. I think that's a question for me. I would like to play Xhaka in midfield and not necessarily Elneny. I would like to let him continue playing. But, you know, when you play Xhaka, then you sort of automatically pick Ramsey for me. I don't like having two left-footed midfielders and then you throw in Mesut Ozil as well. I think it makes us quite predictable. So I think you're right. For me, Kolasinac is also a question. Despite these games being dead rubbers, it feels like Arsene doesn't trust him in a four-man defense. So I think it's going to be Mondreal who continues to hold that position. As you said, it's going to be a tough one because the last game also didn't really show us how much Arsene is willing to change and, you know, switch focus to the Europa League. And with this tie, arguably done and dusted, one could argue, you know, I'm not sure how much focus he's going to switch away from the Europa League for now. So I'm going to be on the fence as well because it's you know, anyone's guess. Quick prediction. We almost met your 10-0 predict. Well, 10-1 prediction this time out.
Yeah, we could have done it. Just to go back on that, it's interesting. If you said to me two players that I think are more than likely to start, I would go Kolasinac and Elneny. But again, I'm looking at least a group of two or three. They will start. I think both of them will start at least one of the three games. But prediction, yeah, 10-0.
10-0, fair enough. I'll go for a 2-1 win. I think we struggle with Southampton a few times, mostly at St. Mary's. But considering there might be quite a few changes in rotation for this game, I think we might have to dig deep and find a result. Anyway, let's move on to questions. We got quite a few of them. That's why I tried to wrap up our initial discussion early. Let's go for one question at a time, Tony, and I'll get the ball rolling on this one. I know you watched Liverpool Man City the other day in the Champions League, so we have a question on that from Smurf11. And as you feared, we're having to talk about the aux at this moment. So he goes on to ask if the aux has actually improved since moving to Liverpool, or is it just hype?
I don't think so. I don't really think he's either. I don't think he's improved. I think for us, people seem to forget in small doses or in certain games, he was verging on unplayable at times for us, at least very, very good. And to be honest, I didn't think he played that well on Tuesday or Wednesday, whatever that was, Wednesday. It was a great goal, but I didn't think he played that well. But I think all it is every time he plays well or scores for Liverpool, the press want to say, oh, look at him, how much he's improved. But, I mean, not comparing the players, but he's got as many goals this season as Monreal. And he's played 12 games more. I think it's just every time that he plays well, they want to forget that he had good games for Arsenal as well, and just point to oh, look, he must have improved. But look, he doesn't automatically, he's not one of the first names on the team sheet. He doesn't get in the Liverpool team every week. There's been times that this season he's been their fifth choice midfielder. Like, they've started a three and then they've made a sub in midfield and it's not been him, and then he's been the next one to come on. I wouldn't even just say it's rotation. You could argue today was rotation against Everton, but in general, it's not like, oh, he's played three games in a row, he might be knackered, so they've rested him. He's probably not started 3 to 5 games in a row this season without looking at stats. So I think he just had one of them games where he was good, but he had them games for us as well.
I completely agree. I mean, if you look at, you know, the facets where Oxlade-Chamberlain really impressed at his time at Arsenal were his running, his powerful running, where he could take on players and run past them and leave them in the wind. And was a couple of times when he took some shots on. I mean, the one against Monaco comes to mind, of course. And if you look at his performances at Liverpool, it's those places where he, you know, still continues to perform in certain moments. Everything else, whether it's his passing, whether it's, you know, playing with his back towards the goal, I don't think he's improved on all of those fronts. So I don't think you could really call it improvement. I think you're exactly spot on with that.
Yeah, I think it's pretty clear. I think, as I said, the press want a reason to hammer Arsenal, and our own fans a lot of the time want a reason to hammer Arsenal. So then that opinion of someone, which I think is false, becomes a sort of popular view, because it's coming from Arsenal fans as well as the media. But as I said, my opinion on it is that he's not really improved. He just happened to have one of his good games, which he did for us also. On to the next question, and it's in two tweets, but what is from the Texas Gooner, who I believe has just had a baby. So congratulations. Hope all is well. Mother and baby are fine. And welcome to the world, little Gooner Charlie, I think his name was.
That's right. Yeah. Congratulations, Texas Gooner. And from all of us at the Clock and Talk, we hope everyone in your family is doing well. And many, many congratulations for welcoming another Gooner into the world.
All right, so his question, and I'm not sure. Oh, no, it was after the baby was born. So let's say it's the Texas Gooner's baby's question, his first ever contribution to the Clock and Talk. What is your take on the Xhaka, Jack, Ramsey performances in central midfield three versus your expectations before they ever played together? And if we advance to the semis in the Europa, do you think he will remain with the trio, or should we be looking to bring Elneny in and be a bit more conservative?
I'll answer the second one first. I think he will continue to persist with this midfield. And the reason is sort of, you know, the reason does give birth to the answer to the first question, which is that we are able to control the ball. I know Jack didn't have one of his better performances in the first leg against CSK, but I think we all can agree that he has better ball control than Iwobi and Welbeck combined. So it gives us a lot more structure. You know, we've spoken about how Mesut Ozil finds himself on the wing, but considering his free role, I don't think that's ever going to be a hindrance to our tactics. I'm interested to hear what you think about it, because I know you like Elneny, and, you know, he has, of course, proved his worth in the last couple of weeks. He does bring a defensive element, so I'm wondering whether that's something you're keeping an eye out for.
No, for me, I think he'll stick with it, and I couldn't have said it better myself. I think we just control the ball better. Not that Elneny gives the ball away a lot, but we're talking back of a bad performance from Jack, so people will probably argue with this. But with them, with Ramsey, Jack, and Granit, we keep the ball, but while usually going forward or looking dangerous, whereas Elneny keeps the ball without really ever threatening. So I think they'll stay with the same three, obviously, fitness allowing and whatnot. And I think the question is maybe somewhat worded wrongly, because I'm not sure, actually. I may be putting words in his mouth. But
well, we can give him a pass. He's a young boy. He's just been born 5 years ago.
He's nailed. I think, as I said, I might be wrong, that the question's leading to should Elneny play instead of Jack, which is what it looks like. Maybe I'm only thinking that because of Jack's performance the other day. But the issue is Jack's playing further up. So if it is Jack that people want dropped, the alternative is Welbeck or Iwobi. And for me, it's a no-brainer that Jack would play. I could, because I've seen a lot of people say Elneny over Jack, but Ramsey can't play high up. So, he makes the late runs, as we've talked about many times. So it would be literally leaving, either moving Ramsey up to suit Elneny, which for me I don't think would be a good idea, or playing with a flat three with Ozil, and if Mkhitaryan's out, Welbeck behind the striker, which again doesn't work for me. I mean, you lose a lot of control on the ball. So for me, I think it stays the same, but obviously that's injuries allowing and also opponent if we do get through.
Fair. I think that's a very fair call. The opposition is going to factor into a degree as well, depending on how we want to switch our tactics. But of course, that will be dictated by who we play. So I think as far as preferred lineups go, I think that's what Arsenal would stick with. Let's move on to the next question, which is from Zain Ali. And he says that, I noticed a certain balance in Lacazette's play. He was coming short when needed, and he was in the box, unlike previously. He was very clever with his movement yesterday. What do you think?
I was thinking about this because I saw the question come in. I don't think he got involved as involved as he usually does, and that's a compliment coming from me, because I've always said I think he gets too involved. I have a slight negative that I wonder if he didn't feel the need to come and feel the ball because he was getting to feel it high up the pitch because of their openness, because of Moscow's openness. So I agree with the question in that his balance was good, but I don't know. Hopefully that is what he's learned to do, that while he's been injured, and that they've said, look, there is no, we don't need you in the centre circle. Hopefully that's what's happened. I don't think this is the right game to judge it on, because as I said, he always wants to feel the ball, but he was getting to do that in a more nine-like position the other day due to how open they were. So if he carries on performing like that, excellent. But I would like to see it again to be not so open.
Yeah, maybe he's been hearing us at the Clock End Talk, and he's been noticing that we've been criticizing him. Or maybe ever since he read Boldy's comments that he could play number 10, he's just trying to solidify his position up top so that he doesn't get thrown back into the middle of the park.
Yeah, as I said, I can't fault the performance the other day. I just want to see it when the space isn't so available at nine, because that's when he struggled before. He's never had an issue when he can get to fill the ball high up, because that's ideally what he wants. But he gets frustrated when he's not getting touches the ball high up, and then he comes deep, and that's when the balance goes all over the place.
Since we are on the subject of Lacazette, there is another question on him, and I'll throw this right back at you. This is from Utkarsh Prabhat, who is at Utkarsh_Museful. He says, did you see the grumpy look on Lacazette's face? Do you think this was because he missed out on a chance of a hat-trick, or do you think it was because Wenger subbed him off?
It's a difficult one, because the substitution was definitely premeditated. They would have said before the game, you're getting 70 minutes today. And players will accept that, especially coming back from injury. I think that it does come an issue where, obviously, he was on a hat-trick and they were so open, it did look like he probably would get another chance. So it's a difficult one, because the club are looking out for him long term, and he would have known before the game that he was coming off. But then when you're put in that situation, it's like, oh, well, I kind of do want to stay on. I want to get my hat trick, but I know I've got to come off. I mean, I'm trying to put it into a realistic situation. Like, you're out and you say, oh, I've got to go home at 3:00, and the most beautiful girl in the world walks in at 2:59:30. It's like, well, I know I've got to go home, but I'm really pissed off about it. And I think, I mean, that's a really bad analogy, but I think it was that sort of situation.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I'd be pissed if he wasn't pissed, That's sort of the hunger you want to see from an attacker, and I completely agree with you. there's no way we can, you know, have him be injured again and be missing, especially with Mkhitaryan gone. Or even if Mkhitaryan was available, I think that point is moot. But I like that sort of drive and that sort of hunger from my striker. So it's always good to see, and hats off to the boss for protecting him for future fixtures.
Yeah, I think if he would have scored one, he wouldn't have been too pissed off. As I said, I think he knew it was coming. It just happened to be the situation he was in. They probably told him before the game, you're coming off at 70 or 65, whatever it was, and he'd have said, yeah, fine, no worries. But then with the situation he was in, he was a bit like, it's a bit of a shit time to come off. On to the next question, which is from Gooners in the USA podcast, also known as Arsenal Fan TV. He starts off by saying, nice lineup, I've missed you, Gim. We're missing him too, unfortunately. sorry. So the question is, who's got better self-confidence at the moment, Eeyore, a poodle, or Alex Iwobi not wearing a green kit?
Oh, God. Yeah, I mean, it's a question that I could throw right back at him because it's not really a tough one, but Alex Iwobi is really struggling at the moment. And as we spoke about earlier, that chance that Mesut Ozil slid in, which, by the way, what a beautiful pass yet again. Simple. Do the simple things right, right? And Iwobi just sort of put his foot through it. The last Sunday when we played, whoever we played, I forget now, but Stoke. When Elneny had that chance, which was point blank, and you know he didn't put that in the back of the net. It's a similar thing, and maybe Elneny's not struggling for confidence, but I think that instance showed that there is a little bit of a problem when it comes to conviction. And I think with Iwobi, that's just the tip of the iceberg at the moment. He's not had a run of games for a while now. It seems like he makes cameos, and that too, very small ones, 10-15 minutes here or there, maybe even less than that. And he's struggling at the moment. I mean, we all want him to do well. We may not be fans of him at certain points, depending on his form. You know, we have the right to criticize him, of course. But I don't think anyone's going to deny that we want him to succeed, especially the way he broke into the team. But right now, he definitely is struggling for confidence big time.
Yeah, I think that's a point a lot of people have missed. That even when he was playing well and confident, his finishing was never great, and he was never, as you said, he never had the greatest conviction anyway. So pair that with a lack of confidence, and it's really a recipe for disaster. In answer to the question, the answer is definitely a poodle, because when I was younger, I had sweets, and a poodle mugged me, and he done it confidently, and he strutted off with my sweets. So a poodle is definitely more confident than Alex Iwobi and Eeyore.
I love that. Next question from the host of the Clock End Talk, Tez, who's missing today. He wants to know, what's your summer wish list?
Margot Robbie.
Playing center forward for us?
I don't care if he plays for Arsenal. I just want to come around my arch. England to win the World Cup. We can all dream, don't laugh. It's difficult. Look, I think we need a winger. We need a centre-back. At least one. It's difficult because I don't know what's going to happen in midfield with Jack and Ramsey. I would imagine at least one is off, but I don't know that, so I can't speculate there. But I think regardless, if no player was to leave, we need a winger, a centre back, and I would say a keeper, but I know you disagree.
Yeah, I mean, I'm having this conversation with Savvy, who also thinks that we need to go in for a goalkeeper. I don't disagree with that. I just think we just won't have the funds to achieve three top class signings, and which brings in the element of Timo Horn, who will be available for cheap. So I wouldn't be surprised if we go in for him, but if I were the manager or if I was in charge, there's no way I'd be looking at bringing in a goalkeeper before a center back and a winger, as you said. So I think it's all about knowing how much funds we have and where we'll be investing those funds, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I agree. But I think it also comes into a question as well. I can see what you mean about not spending big on a keeper, but if someone is available for, say, 25 million, I can't put a name on it, but say a keeper's available for 25, say Butland, just to put a name on it, is available for 25 million, and they think he might be worth 45 million next summer when we really need a keeper, do they bite the bullet and do it now?
Well, by that logic, you would imagine that we would have gone in for players, you know, much before than we did. I mean, I don't think it's going to push someone like Stan, who's so disconnected from the football world, that he, you know, he doesn't know how most of these things work. When you look at it as an individual signing, then $25 million makes perfect sense for someone who has bags of potential. But I think if we are given a lump sum amount, then it'll be difficult to factor in whether that $25 million is throwing us over the ceiling. So as I said, I think it's going to be a toss up, and I don't think we should look beyond Horn, to be honest. If he's someone that Sven has identified, and you know he thinks Sven thinks that he has the potential to bring his form to the Premier League, and if he is going to be available for cheap, I don't know if he should be looking at other players. I mean, to your point, if someone like Horn doesn't work out for $5 million, that's fine. We can go in and bring someone else while we have someone like Peter Cech, who's still, you know, who could still perform at the level that he's required to. So I would rather take a gamble on Timo Horn, see how those things work out, reinforce our squad with world-class players in some of the more pressing issues, and then maybe look to reinvest next season and then go in for a 45, 50 million goalkeeper, since we have the funds and we don't have to reinvest in the outfield players.
In all fairness, I was playing devil's advocate. I said in December, I think we'll sign Horn, and nothing's really changed my mind as long as they do go down and that release clause is there. I think that's more likely. And another point, just obviously because we're talking about transfers, I would say Max Meyer is quite likely to sign now. I'd say, if I was to ask put a number in it, I'd say it's 70% likely.
Where do you think he fits into our squad? And do you think we have another question on that, so I'll quickly read out who that was. This is from Pete, who is at Goatsal Gunner, and he says that with the club's stance on Jack and Max Meyer being linked, you, of course, said that there's a high chance of, you know, us maybe going in for him. But where do you think he figures into the team, and what does that mean for Jack or Aaron?
See, a lot of people are comparing it to Jack, saying, oh, Jack could leave on a free, but then we get Max Meyer in on a free, and it sort of cancels each other out. But you forget, and we lost Coughlin in January without replacing him. Cazorla we lose in the summer. I mean, we lost him 18 months ago, but realistically, we lose him in the summer and there's no replacement. So it's not entirely, it's not like one in, one out. We could sign Meyer and keep Jack and Ramsey. 100%, if we do sign him and one of them two goes, the club will label it as a replacement. But if we sign him in addition to, they will point to losing Coughlin and Cazorla. So it's kind of like covering all bases. I wouldn't be happy if we lose Jack and or Ramsey and get in Max Meyer, because as I said, you've got to look at the other bodies we've lost in Coughlin and Cazorla. And in terms of style of play, he's probably most likened to Cazorla as well. So I see him as a Cazorla replacement, but I have absolutely no doubt that the club will label it as a Jack replacement if Jack goes, just to try and appease fans' views.
Mm-hmm. I've not seen too much of Max. From what I hear, he, you know, it's the same comparison with Santi, but only time will tell whether he can come in and do a job at that level. Let's move on.
Okay, so from MAA Gunner, I still got to call him MAA Gaming because he was that like 4 months ago. But anyway, should we start giving our younger players a go in the Premier League, players like Reece Nelson and Eddie Nketiah?
I'm glad I got this question, because I feel every time Danny Welbeck gets a go, someone on Twitter is arguing that Nketiah should be getting game time. First of all, I don't think Nelson is going to stick around. I mean, he's a talent for sure. And having the Premier League now being a dead rubber, I think we would have given him a chance if he was going to sign a contract and stick around. So I think Nelson is probably half a foot out the door. As for Nketiah, he had a bright moment. I don't think we'd be talking about him a whole lot if that Norwich game ever happened. But I think it's unfair on Danny to discard him and talk about Nketiah all the time. I think people often don't realize that you need a lot of intelligence and a lot of experience to play at the highest level. It's not easy. It's not about being thrown on the 85th minute while you already have a striker up top to work with you and banging the goals. It's not the same to start the game from the beginning and take that pressure on you. It's not good for him if things don't go well, and it's not good for the team. So I don't think that just thrusting younger players into the team, if the competition is moot, is doing them a favor. I think, if anything, it can backfire and really badly. So, not for me at all. What about you?
You kind of stole my thunder. I don't think Reece Nelson will ever play for Arsenal. A load of teams contacted him after pre-season this year, and by all accounts, he completely had his head turned. I don't know if it was money or what it was, but he seems to completely had his head turned. And I don't know if people have noticed, he's been frozen out recently. He's not really been on the bench. You can say he was frozen out anyway because he wasn't getting minutes, but he's not even been on the bench. He's not been in the squads. He's training with the first team still, but you always see pictures when you see training of Eddie training with the first team. There's never any profile on Reece. I think the club are pretty much resigned to losing him. I don't know if he's refused to enter contract negotiations, but by all accounts, he's had his head turned. And the name I'm hearing most is Real Madrid, quite surprisingly.
Wow.
I know. I don't believe it, but that's the name I'm hearing most. In terms of Eddie, again, I completely agree with you that he looked good. Look, he has looked good pretty much every time he's played, to be fair, but it's been 5-10 minutes at the end of games or the extra 2 minutes at the end of the Norwich game, and then he looked good in extra time, but against a very tired Championship defence. And that's not taking anything away from him, because he looked better than any of our other players did. But I don't think anyone has seen enough of him to say he's good enough to start for Arsenal's first team. I think they've seen him have a good half hour in that Norwich game, and then they've been a bit pissed off with things that have happened at times, or mainly Danny Welbeck and Alex Iwobi, and just gone, oh, give that kid a chance. But they're basing that on half hour of football. If Danny Welbeck was a young kid and had the two games he did against Milan, everyone would be going, oh, that Danny kid needs to be starting every week. So for me, I don't think anyone's seen enough of him to be saying, oh, he should be starting. And I don't think he should be starting based on what I've seen.
Our next question is from a regular, who is Sri the Gooner, and he asks a question on Ospina. With him out for 2 to 3 weeks, is it better to put Macy in goal? So another young player being talked about, who of course has a little more experience than Nketiah and Nelson, and also has Granit Xhaka turned a corner?
So I don't think Granit's turned a corner. I've been saying the whole time we've done this podcast, I think he has everything. He just seems to be showing one thing one week and one thing the other. And there was times last season it was towards the back end of last season as well where he was excellent, and a lot of people put it down to the change in formation. And then maybe it wasn't, but towards the back end of this season, he's been very good again. And is it just all of them aspects of his game? Look, there's no doubt that a guy can pass the ball. He has been defensively good in games, but as I said, he doesn't usually show it all at the same time. But recently he has been. So I don't know if turned the corner is the right thing to say. Look, I picked him. At the start of the season, I always do predictions and I publish them, so I can't hide from them. And I thought he would be our player of the year based on the last 10 games of last season. So we're not seeing anything at the moment we haven't seen from him before. We're just seeing something we haven't seen from him this season. In terms of the Czech question, a keeper is very unlikely to get injured, and they want to play. Obviously, players want to play, so I would keep him in the Premier League. Also, anyone that listens regularly knows that I don't rate Macy at all. And the other thing is people saying he's a young keeper. He's 23. He's older than Pickford. He's the same age as Butland. At what point do you just have to go, I know he's come through our academy, but in reality, he's just not got it.
That's fair. I actually wasn't aware that Macy was 23. I was imagining something more like 20. But I think that's exactly your point, right? That maybe it's out of desperation, or maybe it's just out of hoping that we have an academy product who can excel and take over the mantle. And he's not a certain Pole who we shipped off to Juve. So let's not talk about that. That always makes me sad.
I've spoke about it before, but mainly in tweets. I don't think I've mentioned it massive amount on the podcast, that Matt Macy was on loan at Luton last year. And I've got a lot of friends that play in the Football League and various leagues, but I've got some friends at Luton, and they said that he's not like they had. And I tweeted this a few weeks ago, the keeper that's on loan at Wigan, he's on loan at Wigan from Brighton. He saved the penalty from Gabbiadini in the FA Cup, people might have remembered. His name's Christian Walton. He was on loan at Luton for the first half of last season, and they were all saying like how amazing he is, how he's going to be a top player. Brighton recalled him because they wanted him to go up to a higher league, and then so Luton signed Matt Macey on loan. And every single Luton player and every single fan I've spoke to said Matt Macey wasn't even in the same league as him, like couldn't compare. And this is a keeper that Brighton have got out on loan, so he's not even Brighton's top first or second choice keeper. So, I mean, that shows you the level we're looking at with Macey.
Mm-hmm. Shree has another question, so I'll go on and let you answer these. It's, again, a two-parter. He says, how much of an effect does the reduced time for a transfer window combined with the World Cup have on our summer dealings? Is it a good thing that we had a mini reshuffle during the January window?
I mean, the first part of the question, I've been quite vocal in that I think the window closing before the start of the year, is a good thing. I mean, I know Wenger and most of the managers have been moaning about it for years that they think it should happen that way. I think the year they've chose to bring it in is awful, awful timing. So it's something that I've wanted for a long time. But then when I heard they're bringing it in, I thought, oh, you're stupid. You've done it all wrong. Because a lot of countries won't release their players from 2 weeks before the World Cup. Some will. It depends on the size of the player and the size and the aspirations of the country that they're playing for. But a lot of countries won't release players from 2 weeks before the World Cup when they go into their World Cup training camp. And they won't release a player during the tournament for negotiations or medicals or anything, because they don't want their head turned and they don't want their attention elsewhere. So if a team goes deep in the tournament, I think I'm right in saying that the final's around July 14th, give or take a few days. I could be completely wrong. And the season, I think, starts on about August the 10th. So if the players want to go away and have a holiday and whatnot, they've only got a short amount of break as it is. They've only got 3 weeks off as it is if they go deep in the World Cup. Then you've got to couple that with interrupting their holiday to come for a medical or potential negotiations. And I think it's making this summer very tough for everyone. In terms of, I mean, I don't really see that there was a reshuffle. We got some players out that we needed to get out. But we still have a lot of business to do in this window to make us competitive. Or a lot of business we should do in this window, I feel. So, I mean, we done good work in January, but I don't think it particularly helps us that much this summer, because it was all Alexis was going to go in January or the summer either way, so that didn't really do much difference in terms of getting Coquelin, Giroud, Debuchy and whatnot out the door. That isn't going to help us bring in players this in the summer.
Yeah, it's going to be very haphazard, and I think the best way to go about it is just to have your targets identified and do as much as work you can do behind the scenes. I mean, I know it's frowned upon, but as you've said many a times, Tony, that these things happen, if people like it or not. So if it's just about getting, you know, the final details together, maybe that can be left for that window. But if we can buckle down and you know, get most of the work done beforehand, that'd be brilliant.
Moving on to the next question, and I've not seen this name before, so maybe a new contributor or maybe I'm just ignorant. At Zuropabob, given Patrick Vieira's coaching history, would we be better off taking him when Wenger goes, or wait until sometime in the future?
Well, as someone who has seen a bit of the MLS, I know it's not very popular outside the States, but people would probably be surprised to learn that the level of the MLS is very, very bad. And as much as I love Patrick and any of the former Arsenal players who, you know, have been linked with us, it's that same syndrome. I don't think people realize how much experience you need to operate at this high level. Even someone like Arteta, who has been linked with us and, you know, who is now working with Pep Guardiola, of course, you know, taking that higher role is very, very hard, and I would always rather go for someone who is a proven quantity than taking a chance. I mean, I would go for someone like Eddie Howe, who knows the Premier League nowadays, and who has shown some sort of potential at Bournemouth. But any of these players, former players who we've been linked with, I would be very, very cautious of them.
I pretty much agree with everything you said. I mean, I wouldn't go near Eddie Howe either, but also I think people have to realise that Patrick Vieira is in the Man City system now. He's been groomed, horrible word, but he's been groomed to go through their system. He obviously was working with the young, they signed him towards the back end of the year, then he was working with the young players there, and then he's turned up at manager at one of their other clubs. Obviously they're owned by the same company. So I don't see either Arteta or Vieira coming out of the Man City system anytime soon.
Zerubbabel actually has another question for us, so I'll throw this at you. And he says, yay, Gunnar Gimli's in the house. I think that's why Gimli's not with us today, because he's with Zerupa Bob at his house. But his question is, why wouldn't Wenger want to rest Mesut in the final 15, 20 minutes, given how important he is?
I mean, I touched on this earlier when we was doing when we were talking about team news. He doesn't seem to like resting, but whether that comes from Mesut, whether he wants to play most of like the majority of the games, I don't know. I find it strange. I don't know if the other day can maybe be seen as there was more there to go on, and we maybe hope we could completely put the tire to bed, and with the way Ozil was playing, let him do it. I don't know, but I agree with the point that I don't think we do it enough. The only time we tend to take Ozil off is if we need to battle down the hatches, so to speak, or close up shop, like Milan away when, I'm not sure, was it Elneny who came on for him? A more defensive player came on for him.
I think it was Holding.
Holding came on for him or whoever. But that's the only time we seem to take him off. We never seem to take him off as a rest. I don't know why.
Fair call.
He also, I assume he is a regular listener, because he also said, why does Tezza pronounce Ozil as Ozil? Universe knows it's Ozil. I don't know, a lot of the media do that here as well. It's weird, like, just learn to say the bloke's name. It's almost but not as annoying as people spelling Wilshere wrong. That is really annoying. So red_fulcrum, who again asks questions quite regularly, says, I see people aren't happy with Jack's performance recently. Who do you think could replace him in the current formation? Also, how do you guys know each other?
It's going to be very difficult to just replace him in the current position because, I mean, the obvious answer is Mesut Ozil. But then you look at the dearth of options we have, or the dearth of quality options we have for the wingers, and it just makes sense to continue playing Jack there. I mean, we just spoke about this, so I'm not going to get too much into it, but I think patience is what we need right now, because Jack definitely has the best ball control and ability to find players, whether that's, you know, from tight spaces or from dropping deep. So, I mean, I stand corrected from last week where I thought Jack would be dropped. And I think we just sort of have to look at these things objectively, because I think he's spot on that people are not happy with him, but that doesn't mean you just throw him out. I think you continue giving him, you know, the responsibility. And let's not forget that he's the one who cares about, you know, the club arguably more than anyone else in the squad. So he will always give his 100%. So, you know, he could reach that confidence sooner rather than later. As for knowing each other, we're all, you know, Twitter buddies. That's how we got to know each other. And just started doing this podcast. I mean, I joined in later, of course. Tez and Tony were the ones who did this for a couple of months before I joined in. But I'm glad I got to meet these two bastards and talk Arsenal with them every week.
Yeah, firstly, on the Jack point, I think with Mkhitaryan's injury, we've kind of missed the chance to give him a rest or drop him, however you want to call it, because we could have gone Aubameyang left, Ozil at 10, Mkhitaryan right. Behind Lacazette. But without that, you're then looking at either probably Iwobi or Welbeck at 10. And as I said, I think most people would agree that we'd prefer Jack there. In terms of knowing each other, so Tez reached out to me when he started the Clock End Talk to see if I would write articles for the website initially, and I'm too lazy to write. So I said I'll do anything where I can speak, but writing, I just can't be bothered. So obviously me and Tez were the founders. Well, Tez was the founder of the podcast, but that's where I came into it. And Schwinn just kind of turned up one week. I can't even really remember where he came from. I actually don't know how he got involved. I remember being annoyed at his first podcast because he was arguing with stuff that I knew was true. So I just thought he was an idiot, honest.
That's what it's all about. Well, I just reached out to, I don't know how I found out, I found you guys, but I think it, maybe it was through the mole. But I just reached out one day and asked if you guys ever needed, you know, an extra mouth. And I didn't realize that I'd be the fifth mouth, but I think that's how things shaped up that one week. And as is the case usually with me, I like to play devil's advocate, but I learned from time to time that it's better not to argue with certain facts. It doesn't work like that everywhere. Let's move forward. We have quite a few questions on Jack, and they're all a little different. So do excuse us listeners if you are getting a little pissed off at this. But this question is from Just Ice, who is at TJBear5. He asks, do you think Wilshire contract dispute is affecting his performance? And the second part of the question is very interesting. Where in the world do you rank Ramsey as the, you know, amongst the best midfielders?
In terms of Jack, he's definitely playing like his mind is elsewhere, and whether that be that he's agreed to sign for another club or he's just worried about his contract situation. I'm not sure I've said it before because I didn't really want to say it at the time, but when I was told about his rejected, when he rejected the first contract, I was told, and it sounds ridiculous and you may not believe me, but I don't really care, but I was told he doesn't see himself as financially secure for life, which is why he wasn't willing to accept a low offer. So whether the fact of I don't know where my next club's going to be, I don't know where I'm going to be next year, I may have to relocate, whether money's be it playing a factor in his head, or whether he wants to stay at Arsenal with everything that he has with all his heart, but again, he's got finances on his mind, I don't know. But I was told that that was a factor, and he certainly is playing like he has other things on his mind. In terms of the second part of the question, Ramsey, where do I rank him worldwide? It's a tough one because I've said on this a few weeks ago, I don't think his season's actually been as good as his numbers have been this season, which is not necessarily a bad thing. If you can not play brilliant but have great numbers, I'll take that all the time. I'd have probably said the same about Frank Lampard a lot of the time, that I'd probably thought he didn't have a great year, but you look at his numbers and go, oh, that's outstanding. It's difficult because I'd put him at better than a lot of box-to-box players. But then when we was doing our world-class squad a few weeks ago, like a 25-man squad of who we see, who would get in our 25-man squad of the best players in the world, I didn't even consider Ramsey, if I'm honest. Who I did put in there was Vidal. And there's an argument to say that Ramsey's more effective than Vidal. I just think Vidal's more of a complete player. I think Pogba has a higher maximum. I think a fire in Pogba's a frightening player. I think he has absolutely everything. In some ways, I compare him to Granit Xhaka in that I think he has everything, Pogba, but just can't seem to put it all together. So I'd say Ramsey is probably not as all-round as Vidal and not as complete as Pogba, but more consistent. So where you want, and I'd say they're the best three, probably box-to-box in the world. I don't count people like Modric or Kroos as box to boxes, but so where you rank him among them three is depending on what you like. But I mean, he's definitely up there in the conversation for me.
I will comment just briefly on Jack because I think you're exactly right when it comes to financial security. I mean, I think people often just ignore the fact that despite making a huge sums of money, you know, these players have a certain standard of living. And you know, a lot of times they have a big entourage, you know, which may include friends, family members, or whoever that they take care of. And just because they're minting money, you know, week in, week out, doesn't necessarily mean they always have the highest of bank balances. That's why you have so many ex-players who are, you know, who've turned pundits. You know, they'll try their hand at different ventures and try to have a side gig where they're, you know, able to generate some money. Of course, today in today's world, it's easier with, you know, endorsements and social media activity. Instagram is a major money-making tool for these people. I mean, if you look at Sergio Ramos's Instagram account, it's essentially a newspaper where you just get advertisements all the fucking time. So I think you're exactly right about that. I've seen a lot of tweets and people commenting about Jack being, you know, at this point he's just going for the money and he doesn't care about the club anymore. And I laugh those off because I think they, you know, those people are not really thinking what's going on. So I think that's a very important point that people shouldn't forget, that if he is looking for that extra money, it's not out of greed. It's basically out of being able to sustain himself and sustain his standard of living.
Yeah, as I said, I was told it. I was shocked when I heard it. I'm not going to pretend I was like, oh, yeah, I knew that. But when I was initially told that he rejected the contract, which was when everyone else was saying that he'd signed, the reason I was told, as I said, is that he doesn't see himself as financially stable and that he's just got married to a woman, I'm presuming, who doesn't work. He's got two kids from, at least one of them is from a different relationship. I'm not sure if both. And I don't know too much about his personal life, so I don't want to get too much into it. But I believe both the kids live with him, which means he's probably paying the mum something. Or even if they don't live with him, he's probably paying the mum quite a lot a week in terms of child maintenance because it goes based on your earnings.
Right.
So he probably, by all accounts, he lives a pretty quiet life and he's happy at home with his family. But he probably has quite a lot of his wage gone before he gets it, if that makes sense. And you think he's going to... Say he has a long career, he retires at 36, that is a long career these days at top level. He then has to maintain his standard of life for probably another 50 years if he lives to 86, potentially 60 years if he lives into his 90s. And he probably doesn't have much earning power after football. So I'm not saying he doesn't have a lot of money now, because I'm assuming he probably does. But I don't know if he has... as I said, the term I was told is he is not set for life. And that's what footballers look to do, because they know they're not going to work too much. On the whole, they're not going to work a lot after football. So they need to make their money in this short career to cover the rest of their life.
Yeah, I mean, it's only fair. I mean, if you look at, you know, what's been reported as to how much he's asking for, he's not asking for, you know, an abysmal amount of money. It's very much reasonable. You know, if other clubs are willing to offer him that, then, you know, there you go with supply and demand. And I think people are jumping, you know, to conclusions here. And I think you did really well to bring up that point. I'm just scrolling through the thread. I don't know if we have any more questions, Tony. Do correct me if I'm wrong, though.
Yeah, but you avoided the Ramsey. Where do you rate him?
I don't really think he's up there, to be honest. As you said, his numbers have been brilliant. He's capable of moments. But would I choose him over a Paul Pogba in my team? I don't think so. Would I choose him over a 30-year-old Arturo Vidal? I think that's how old he is at this point. I don't know. Of course, one of the questions that, you know, about him is, of course, his fitness. And, you know, it's been a while since Aaron Ramsey has picked up a long-term injury. So he is proving that part of his fitness. But... you know, you're only as good as the time you pick up another one, and that remains to be seen whether that's going to be the case with him. Again, I completely agree with you that he's not a Modric or a Cruz. Another name I could add into the mix is probably Nainggolan, but then again, I don't know how, you know, Nainggolan would really perform in the Premier League. For me, Paul Pogba, of course, is up there. And he's probably the one I would go for if I was to pick, a dream 11. N'Golo Kanté, to an extent, also figures in that role, but he's, of course, a little more defensive than offensive. But one could argue at this point, if you had N'Golo Kanté in our team, then we would be a different animal. So it's a tough one, but I think he's on track to prove that he's one of the best. And if that is the case, then it'd be a real shame that if he doesn't renew with us.
What I would say, which I didn't add before, is if he posted these same numbers that he's got this season at Barcelona, everyone would tell you he's world-class, without a shadow of a doubt.
Yeah. I mean, I don't disagree with that either. I think in terms of team dynamic, it's a little different, just because of, you know, his defensive inefficiencies. When we're able to take teams on and attack, you know, 70 minutes or 60 minutes in a game, it's good having a skill set. But when you have to sit deep, be patient, be disciplined, I think he's a little trigger happy. So yes, as a microcosm of his numbers, he's brilliant. And I would rather have someone who's giving those numbers than just, you know, being very, very good every week. I'm still not 100% proven, you know, convinced rather, when it comes to him.
Okay, on to the next one, and it's Jonas82 or at Jovie82. He's asked two questions, but one's about Mkhitaryan, and we literally covered it word for word by accident earlier. Hmm. So I'm not going to go on that. But his other question is, why does Iwobi get all the stick and Jack gets praised? Iwobi's stats this season are far better than Wilshere's.
I'm going to resort to your saying that people, you know, usually watch football with their eyes. And I think more and more nowadays people are steering away from stats because it doesn't give you the full picture. Let's not also forget that Jack has been an Arsenal player for much longer than Iwobi has. So there's a lot more invested from the fans, not in terms of money, but in terms of emotional connection with Jack. So before we, you know, go hammer and tongs into Jack, I think there's some caution that we heed to the wind. And Iwobi, on the other hand, I think he's more frustrating as a player. Because the one thing that bothers me much about Alex Iwobi is his proclivity to be safe. From an Elneny, that's not a problem because he's a tidy player. Get the ball, pass it to Grant Xhaka or Aaron Ramsey. They can take care of things forward. But when you're playing higher up the field, if a pass doesn't work out once or twice, it doesn't mean you give up. You know, it doesn't mean that you just play the square ball from then on out. And I think Iwobi is extremely prone to doing that. And I think that's one of the reasons he gets a lot of stick. I don't think most of our fans would argue that he could have a potential future at Arsenal. But if he does not, you know, doesn't believe in himself, then the fans won't believe in himself. And I think that's the major reason as to why Iwobi and Jack are seen differently. What do you think?
I disagree with quite a lot of the question. Initially, the first thing that springs to mind is the lifestyle they live. Jack got absolutely hammered for smoking pre-season about 5 years ago. And Iwobi got hammered, rightly, for going out when he shouldn't have been, when he was on a club curfew, essentially. Iwobi seems to be living the lifestyle of a top-draw footballer without ever being there. He went out the night before, or two nights before, the Forest game, and he was awful. And as I said, if you just look at his Snapchat, his Twitter, his Instagram, or whatever social medias, he just seems to be not living the life that you would want a professional footballer to live. You can get away with that if you're being brilliant on the pitch. But when you're not being brilliant on the pitch, the advice would be keep your head down and just do your work and be quiet, essentially. So I think a lot of anger comes from that. In terms of stats, it depends what stats you look at. I assume he's got one league goal against Brighton. Jack's got one league goal against Chelsea. In terms of assists, because you've said it, I'm going to assume Iwobi has more assists. He plays higher up. He plays in a more attacking position. But one stat I would prefer to look at, if you're going to go on stats, and everyone knows I don't, but if you're going to, is man of the matches. And again, I don't need to look to know that Jack has a lot more. So I would rather him have a few less assists and be the best player on the pitch multiple times than someone who maybe, as I said, has a couple more assists, but has got assists in good teams. Purely looking at numbers, one of his assists was a 2-yard ball to Ramsey against Everton, where Ramsey had a shot from 30 yards that deflected and went in and the keeper should have saved. If you look at purely at numbers, you go, oh, I won't be adding an assist. That doesn't show you the level of his game at all. Similarly, I could say the same the other way around. Jack got an assist away to Everton, funnily enough, for Ramsey, where he slid a 5-yard ball and Ramsey had a 1-on-1, and it was an easy assist. So this is why I don't like dealing with numbers, and as I said, that's where my saying is born from, watch football with your eyes. And I think anyone that's watched their games as a whole throughout the season, as I said, the last two or three games from Jack have been poor, and I think that's what people have got in their minds. But if you watched their season as a whole, I don't even think there's a doubt that Jack's been better. I don't think anyone could watch every game or every minute they've played this season and say, oh, that Iwobi bloke's been better.
Very well said. I think if one thing is for sure, that we're not the most fond of numbers on this podcast. There's a lot of analysts out there who do a very good job of creating speculative models and all that. But, you know, certain things are not answerable by numbers, and intangibles will always exist. So I couldn't have said it any better. Let's move on to our last question, which is from another new listener, I believe. His name is Lou Hall. And he goes on to make a statement and then ask a question. Arsenal have one European trophy in 132 years of history. Is the Europa League a huge trophy for the club?
I'll probably get a lot of stick for saying this, but if it was 5 years ago and you didn't get a Champions League place, I would say absolutely not. But the fact is you do. But so it is a huge trophy for us at the moment, but not for the trophy you're winning, for the prize we're getting. In the same way, it's like saying it's making a bit of a change of scenario out of it. It's like saying Wenger has never won the League Cup. Is that gigantic for Arsenal or Wenger? And I know we wanted to win it. I know we lost in the final and we all wanted to win it. But no one will ever say it's huge in the history of Wenger that he has or hasn't won a League Cup. If this was a Champions League, of course, my answer would be completely different. But we've got to look at the facts, and it is what it is. It is a second-class European competition. And the other European competition we won, which was a Cup Winners' Cup, was at least a second-class competition, arguably a third-class European competition.
I kind of disagree with that a little bit, not a whole lot, because what you said is fact. But I think you've said it a few times that you can only win what's ahead of you. And I think we're in that situation right now. And the best way to make something out of this season, which let's be real, is quite a disappointing season, is to get some silverware home. And if it wasn't the Carling Cup or the Carabao Cup, I'm sorry, it's definitely not going to be the FA Cup or the Premier League. So I think the Europa League does provide that prize, that incentive. It's going to be something that will attract players. Probably a little more than usual, because we've seen that we've been able to attract players either way, but it's always that catalyst for the next season. So I think when it comes to what's ahead of you, I think there would be nothing better than to wrap up the season with a trophy, and that being the Europa League trophy. And as Lou pointed out, we've got just the one, which is the Cup Winners' Cup, which I think was before I was born, so more than 25 years ago. It just seems like it's a good way to get something out of this season than nothing. So let's hope that we can progress in this tournament. And we do have some other good teams, especially Atletico comes to mind. So we'll see how things go there.
I don't want to be misunderstood. At this point onwards, of course, it's major we win it. But I'm saying if we didn't have the Champions League connected, I would still want to win it. Of course I do. I want to win every game Arsenal play. But in terms of the history of the club, which he's brought up, so is winning this competition huge for the history of the club? If it didn't have the Champions League attached, my answer would be no. I'm not saying from this point onwards is it important. Of course it is, because we're in the here and now. But I don't think in 50 years people will go, we won the Europa League in 2018, in the same way that majority of people, like you know about Anfield 89, mm-hmm. I bet you know a whole lot less about the Cup Winners' Cup.
That's true, yeah.
And that's what I meant for our listeners as well. In terms of history of the club.
Yeah, and I think you hit the nail on the head that it's all about the prize. It's not essentially about the trophy or the pedigree that comes with it. It's all about the prize. I think you hit the nail on the head with that.
Yeah, but as I said, from this point onwards, of course it's huge. It's huge in the here and now. In terms of history of the club, not so much. No, not at all, in my opinion.
Fantastic. I think that wraps us up, Tony. If I haven't missed any questions, maybe we could call it a day and turn to the Manchester derby, which starts in about an hour or hour and a half here. So
yeah, no more questions I can see.
Perfect. So thanks for listening. Thanks for downloading. We're sorry about the day's delay. We're usually pretty on point with our podcast, but we ran into some technical difficulties, as mentioned earlier.
Can I just interrupt there? The yes, good please. News is that it means you're going to be able to hear us again in 2 days, because
that's
Southampton tomorrow, and we'll be recording again on Monday.
Or one could say you could tolerate us again in a couple of days, so whatever floats your boat. We'll try and have Gimli on sometime this week, if not sometime this month. He's, again, as I said, running into some technical issues. So keep an eye out for that, and we'll definitely keep you guys updated. Thank you for listening. Thank you for downloading. Up the Arsenal.